Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with two lovely individuals. One of them is got his hair combed and he looks quite organized, and the other one is all dusty from our backroom adventures. You can guess which is which. I'm here with Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, and Dan Vandermonker, our producer extraordinaire. Gentlemen, it's the backroom shuffle day.
I just ran a comb through my hair, so I didn't even look at it, really. I wasn't even thinking about my hair today. Thank you.
We are like coal miners out of the back room of our artistic practice.
Yeah.
We spent all morning like just wheeling this push cart. This wooden push cart out of the back room with strange wares and clutter and garbage and the detritus of our careers built up behind us.
So backstory here, Greg and I came together and got the studio in 2016, and it's 1,000 square feet. It's quite large. And it was large enough to have all of our inventory as well as our desks and everything else.
Fresh-faced Justin and Gregory said, we could never need more space than this.
Never need more space.
Impossible.
And across the hall, there was a door that was never opened. Nobody ever went in or out. We had no idea what it was. There was just this mystery door there.
And we found the fire escape map. We looked at the fire escape map to figure out roughly how big the room must be. We did a little bit of measuring.
Carry on.
I remember that mystery beginning.
Along the way, we also became pretty good friends with the maintenance guy who runs the building and fixes all the problems, put out the fires. The person that keeps his building running.
He's like the building manager, but also the keeps the boiler from exploding.
Is he like the Mr. Furley of the building?
But competent, unlike Mr. Furley.
Okay.
And one day he was walking by. I said, can we see that room? Can we look in there? We're just it was 2-3 years we'd been here.
We built up our confidence because he had showed us what room had the breaker switches in it. Because we kept blowing the breaker on our thing. And so he was like, hey, come over here, guys. I'll show you where you can do that yourself. Since you don't have to call me every time, it's not a major issue. So I think we were emboldened by the idea that, oh, yes, he has keys to everything. Show us.
So the room across from ours, where Studios 716, room 718, is this forgotten corner of the building on the top floor, snuggled in between an exterior wall and the freight elevator. And it's about 200 square feet it's a 200 square foot closet. It is not meant for a person to work in there or be in there.
It's like the setting of many of the scenes in Saw.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? It's the kind of room where you'd wake up taped to a chair with a locking mechanism around your neck and you'd have to figure out the puzzle.
The lighting is appropriate as well.
Okay. Is that what you guys are planning to do with this space or what do you
know? So as soon as we saw it, we said, oh my perfect. God. This is for us.
This is a perfect space for our Saw experiments.
We'd been printing more books. At this point in the studio, we had part of the studio was just kind of almost walled off with inventory. And we had tables constructed out of boxes of books. We just had a lot of stuff. And it was starting to encroach on the creative ambiance.
I love building forts, but every day became fort building. How do we build the stock into a thing that is useful, right?
So we quickly, as soon as we saw it, we were like, let's get this. Let's rent this as well. And it's much cheaper than normal studio space because it is not considered livable, tenable space.
It's storage space. We said if we took it as is with no leasehold improvements and nothing, we'll take it. What's the bargain price you would give us for this place? Because no one would take it in the state it was in except for us. But we had also compared storage, rental spaces for if we wanted to have an offsite storage of the books that was climate controlled and whatever, it was going to be twice as much as just renting that space across the hall.
Those places are pricey. Then you got to drive all the way across town it's a very big
trip.
This is everything central.
So it's a win. Sure. And it's right beside the freight elevator, which takes us to the loading dock. So when Justin flies away to some warm place for a vacation and his books arrive, then I can haul them up the freight elevator.
Happened one time. There's only 1,000 books.
Okay.
So anyway, we, not unlike the way sedimentary layers over eons will build up and fossils will be set in that detritus of years gone by, our back room has reached a place where excavation is required in order to make it useful again. Kind of like, this is must be what it was like when they found, what is it, Chatelhayuk or Hyuk, where they found the skull room in Chatelhayuk, where they open it up and there's just like this room that was all made of human skulls. And you guys don't know about this? The Cradle of Civilization? People. Okay, well, read a book once in a while.
All I know, we've been talking about saw experiments and human skulls.
This is what it felt like because I got here early.
Okay.
Right, a little bit ahead of, it's a snow day here in Winnipeg, everything's running slow, but I managed to get here a little, an hour or two before Justin, and so I just leaned into it. I started excavating. And I kept finding, and I promised your listener this is leading to a discussion about art. I kept finding all of these different little pieces from Justin and my ancient past that were experiments that hinted at the kind of directions we would one day take. Now, looking at it in retrospect, it was like, oh, yes, I knew that these stands and this thing led to this kind of display, and that kind of display led to this kind of printing needs, and that led us to then talk to this person. And like I was going through the whole history of our lives as I was unpacking it all. But then it got me thinking about AI art.
Oh, all the rage on TikTok.
Right? Emphasis on rage, yeah. I think. it got me thinking about all the different iterations that both Justin and I, who work very differently and have very different sort of games and goals and aspirations, all the different ways we iterated and became different things along the way. Now, you kind of just do that with a button. And there isn't a room filled with all the ways you tried things. There's just some little line of code of all the ways something else tried things. And that's what I want to talk about today. What are you guys' thoughts? Number one, how well-versed are you or well-read are you on the topic of AI art? I think that's important for the dear listener to know about. How versed are you in the...
Okay, well, I'll start with what I know. And I just saw a video on this on TikTok on this recently. Because the big trend has been, I guess there's some kind of program people can put their own photos in and then it will reimagine you as like a warrior or like, and some of them are really cool. Like it takes the person's face, basically.
Turns them into a sci-fi book cover.
Yeah. Or like a fantasy book cover or something like that. And so there's all kinds of, I have a friend who's really into Warhammer. And so she kind of combined herself with all these Warhammer looking things. And so there's a lot of fun in that respect. So I understand that's what it is. But I saw a video that was talking about what it actually does. And the irony is that there's actually no intelligence involved. It's not artificial intelligence. It's not AI.
Yeah, right.
It's just an algorithm that collects images from across the internet, regardless of whether or not they are protected by copyright. It's just
combing
the internet for images, then it puts it all together, I guess, and whatever you input into it.
For the dear listener, I think it's important that we mention a couple of the nascent terminologies that are important to know about when you're thinking about or looking up stuff about AI art. Scraping is one of them. Scraping is the way that it searches the internet for the kinds of things you want, and it takes copyrighted images and scrapes them all into a place and uses that as a data set. So scraping. And for those of you who are actual programmers, I pardon my very basic explanation of that. And then iteration, I think, is a really important thing to understand. When we talk about iteration on our podcast a lot, it's the way you take an idea. You like a little piece of it, you change this, you add this, you take your influence from this, your idea from that, your conversation from someone else, and you make a new version that's close, but not quite the same. And you might, for a client, say, if someone says, hey, I want you to do a bunch of starships for our board game, which you did, mm-hmm. and you had to iterate a bunch of different starships. So you gave them a whole bunch of things that kind of had a set of influences. And then they picked from those. And every time they picked, it helped narrow what the overall look would be, right? So AI is doing that a second at a time, right? You can do 1,000 of those and then just produce one for you instantly. So that iteration, it's scraping from other people's mm-hmm. work and then iterating based on what it scraped, based on your prompts.
So it's doing what we do.
This is what I'm getting at, is like, isn't that essentially what we do? I was scraping away in the back room, looking at all the different influences that that have become the career path I have now, starting to think about, like, is my disdain, dislike of AI art the same, is it just a natural way in which people, when they're confronted with something new, retreat to what they know and then hold on to it? So my first thought is like, oh yeah, it's kind of bullshit. So I'm trying to hold that thought and say, okay, how people are using the tool now maybe is arguably, questionably ethical.
Rotate the pod, please, Hal. Rotate the pod, please, Al. I don't think he can hear us. Rotate the pod, please, Hal. Yeah, I'm sure we're okay. Well, what do you think?
Didn't you say there was like a booth at a Comic-Con somewhere selling this?
Lyndon was the one who actually saw this, but apparently at the Fan Expo in August, there was a booth that was set up selling AI-created art. And I believe they were there for one day and enough people complained about it that they got kicked out.
Really?
So I imagine, and we haven't done too many conventions the last little while, but I imagine this is going to become a pretty common thing.
But are they just taking the person's photo and then just doing what you could do yourself on your phone? They're just formalizing it and printing out a print of it.
Yeah, there's certain services for AI art where you can get high-res versions.
Yeah, yes. So I signed up for one called Midjourney just to like see what the hype was about. That's a big one. There's a paid service, but there's also like 25 or 30 iterations you can do just by going on to their Discord. So if you're curious about it and you want to actually have an informed opinion, it's easy to say, oh, AI art is bullshit. I don't want to do anything with it. I hate it. But if you've never used it, I feel like you are really not qualified to have an opinion. It's like giving a review of a movie you haven't watched, right?
Sure.
And while it is true that it is scraping the internet to make those things, if you don't try to commercialize them, you have not committed any kind of fraud, and neither have they.
So I think
it's only the people who are then commercializing those copyrighted image sources that are committing some kind of crime. You know?
Remember a couple of years back, splatter artists were everywhere at conventions?
Oh, yeah.
And so splatter art, for those who don't know, it's basically when you take an image of, it was usually like famous comic book or video game characters. So you take Spider-Man and Link from Zelda and Mega Man, and you put it through basically a filter, and it gives you kind of a version of that painting.
It was a layer mask in Photoshop.
Yeah, that looks like it's made with splattered pieces, like splattered paint. And so suddenly at Comic-Cons, there was these artists showing up with these huge booths with just hundreds of pictures that you recognize as the original, like, official art of that character, but in this splattered filter.
The one guy who was doing it, I think it was the one person who was doing it that seemed to last the longest. They've since gone.
He kept getting kicked out.
Yeah, he was, or she, there was like, I think it was a family that was working on it. They had a business idea, right? And they took all of their favorite action figures, would pose them, take photos of those action figures, and then
run it through
this filter. And so what it does is it takes a color or an idea or a shape, and you program the filter to say, turn that into a watercolor bleed.
Yeah.
And so it would spray as if it had been made with ink.
So how is that different?
Yeah. Well, this is my question.
Here's my question. How is that different from like the gold foil that you put on your prints and that kind of stuff?
That's because you can't do it by hand.
So, like, my thing, what makes me angry is the what we just talked about is you're hitting a button. And whereas we spend anywhere from 8 to 70 hours on a painting to get that same result.
And there are a lot of digital elements to what we do, but there's a labor piece. Now, so for the dear listener who's wondering, like, what all the fuss is about, this is the first time you're hearing about AR. The most succinct argument against it that I heard, I saw in a little webcomic. And so, and the amusing thing here is I don't know who made it because it was not attributed. So I'm now going to share that work with you without being able to give credit where it's due. So if you know, you can, I don't know, leave a comment somewhere. send me
he
a
said
letter.
Confidently. Yeah. He has no idea. Yes, address, please. Put your box.
But it was put like this. Imagine that you had a birthday party at the end of the day. that you wanted to go, and someone said, okay, you have to make a cake for this party. And so in order to make that cake, you visited five other birthday parties on the way, and you took a piece of cake that they had made, that that mom is like, oh, I made a strawberry cake, and someone's like, oh, I made a chocolate cake. And you took a piece, and you put it on your plate until you had enough to make a whole cake. And then you showed up at the birthday that you're supposed to be hosting, and you said, I made a cake for you all.
That cake sounds amazing.
Yeah, I know. That's like the one I buy at Safeway that has little pieces of like each has four different kinds of cake in it. Because my kids can never agree on
this.
What
is exactly it. The end user says, this looks amazing and I can have just what I want.
Yeah.
Right? But did the person who brought that cake to the last birthday party, are they an artist?
No.
Or are they a producer? Isn't that what, because the other argument is isn't this what a film director does? They're not physically capable of doing everything. They have a whole team of hundreds of people making their dream true.
Here's what I will say. An algorithm is not an artist.
Right.
Okay, so if we're getting back to AI art, which is what this is about, that is not, an algorithm making those decisions is not going to be the same thing as a human making those decisions. And I think that will be apparent in the meaning of the piece. Like, people buy art for different reasons. They buy it because they have a connection to the artist. Sometimes they buy a certain style, or they just like the photo, or they like the picture, right? I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just saying that it has more meaning for me if I know that a human did it. I wouldn't pay for AI art.
But here's what people are doing, and here's what I think we're going to see more of. I'm going to go on Midjourney. I'm going to like make it make me 40 different paintings, and then I'm going to just paint over those. So it'll look like my stuff, but I'm just kind of tracing over the good ideas that the computer came up with.
If it's your own work, who cares? It's your own work.
But that's what we're seeing. We're seeing artists who are semi-competent, but not really really full-time, or like really, they're basically getting the AI to do all the heavy lifting, and they are just doing the final touches and presenting it as, this is my art.
And the argument
for sale
currently being used, I don't know if it's not even an argument. The example being presented for why it's not authentic is this. I saw one person say, okay, in all these different AI art generators, I've put in Afghani woman with green eyes. And every single one of them gives back the National Geographic cover in some different version. That famous National Geographic cover, right? And you know what we're talking about. Everybody knows
why do I know that?
Because it's a very iconic image. It's iconic. Very iconic.
And because it's so iconic.
I didn't know she was Afghani, right? But I do know that image.
I can see that very clearly in my
head.
And
so that's all that it gives back.
Because there's so many images like of that.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, once you take the human element of it out of it, it does not. It becomes not art.
So
I think a human has to be involved for it to be art.
But they're only involved for the last 10% in a lot of
these
cases.
Here's the thing, and that's what you're talking about is not. There's two different things. There's selling AI generated art, or there's using AI to bolster your own art and misrepresent what your work is. Which, and I don't like that.
That's where I think we're going to see a lot of like conventions in the next year. I think there's going to be a lot of AI art either blatantly there or very close to the surface.
Number one, Dan, you're describing Tim's Vermeer. When people found out that Vermeer used a machine to accomplish his paintings, the art world was in an uproar. But really, he was just using an optical machine so that he could never paint something incorrectly. He was just tracing a projection onto his own screen. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know what I'm talking about, look up the documentary Tim's Vermeer.
It's a great documentary.
An engineer who figures out how to paint exactly as Vermeer did with no painting skills whatsoever.
And right? So the artist is so pissed off at him.
Right. Right. People get so mad when he's showing them these Vermeer paintings. They're like, oh, this is a Vermeer. And he's like, no, I made that in my garage.
Good evening, Dave.
How you doing, Hal?
Everything's running smoothly. And you?
Oh, not too bad.
Have you been doing some more work?
A few sketches.
May I see them?
Sure.
The other thing that you mentioned is something, and I've been talking to my kids about it, is I've been calling it the guitar argument. A guitar does not make music. A guitar is capable of making music, and the input of the artist plus the guitar creates music.
Mm-hmm.
So is this not just another instrument that artists can use? And once they figure out how to control those inputs, because one of the things you can do on some of the AI art programs is you can provide your own prompts for it. So you can upload, here's 20 photos I took. here's 20 drawings I took. Make a drawing in the style of these photos, and then it will generate those.
And I imagine there's some pretty cool combinations and some pretty cool stuff you could come with, with doing that.
Like, so immediately, like, I want to go and put all my artwork in and see what iterations it gives me, right? It's...
Combine it with your face. I want to see your face on these robots.
Right.
And this isn't going to go away, right? Like,
no, it's here to stay.
Today on the internet, like, to kind of timestamp this, ArtStation today, every single artist posted a no AI post. Like, they uploaded a picture. It's the exact same, it's just text. No AI art. And I think Instagram is kind of covered in it as well, which, like, it's good to talk about. This is not going away. It's not there.
But it's not going in away any more than electronic music is going away.
No, but do you think it might genericize? I don't know if that's a word, but make this more generic as far as artwork goes in general. I mean, you guys talk a lot about creating your own style and standing out from other artists. I imagine the artists who don't use this very well will just seem like every other artist. Like, as much in the way we talked about Grammarly making all writing the same, this kind of algorithm will make all art the same. Right?
Right. So then actual innovation will stand out. It's a good point. But the other the other side of it is...
Because it does have a style to it.
Yeah.
Like, once you've seen enough of it, you start to...
Well, but that's only because what's happening... Now, I don't know this for a fact. My observation of the discords I've been on, where I'm looking at how people are using AI art, one of the reasons why it's all starting to look the same is as soon as somebody in the Discord uses a set of prompts that creates something that is aesthetically beautiful, interesting,
everybody
pleasing.
Everybody does that same thing.
Everyone adds that list of prompts to theirs and then is getting similar results with slightly different outputs.
And the more results are out there, the more they're all going to start looking the same.
Start scraping its own.
All the scrapings, yeah.
Right, it's going to feed it into itself. So let's jump forward to like a few years from now, theoretically, where AI is just a function that now Photoshop has, where you say, you put in a little text prompt that says, I'd like a widescreen blue background landscape in the foreground, ocean in the background. Here's 10 rough drawings I've done, and here's 13 photographs that I took. You click a little box that says, are you the author of all of the works that you've uploaded into your AI? You say yes, and now you can use it commercially any way you want.
Well, I don't know about the last step there. Mm. Is that what that's what they would
ask?
Well,
that's what you do in publishing now with fonts.
Is that right?
Right, because fonts are art that people don't pay for mostly, but you're supposed to pay for them, and you're supposed to list that you use them in your books.
Yeah, not a lot of people
do
that.
Do people do it? No. But should they? Yes. Is it best practice? Yes.
Right. I don't know if you guys have seen the latest season of Westworld. One of the characters is she creates NPCs for video games and virtual reality stuff. And she sits at her computer and she's like, okay, I'm thinking of a man and he's in a wheelchair. He's a bit older. No, not that old. And as she's talking, it's auto-filling in what she's saying. It's creating a character. And she is just dictating. Is that where we're heading? Whereas 5 years from now, anybody with a story can sit at an AI website and go, okay, I want my main character to be a duck. Cuter. No, not that cute. Maybe a little less cute. Okay, now put him in a pond. Okay, now the next character I want you to make is a grasshopper. And they can now make an entire storybook just by dictating it out without any art skill whatsoever.
Will people's artwork be like, you know, in Photoshop you can buy different pens, right? Different textures. Yeah. Will people's artwork be the textures that you buy in packages that you're allowed to remix?
It could be an opportunity for you guys to make some money if you license your artwork for this kind of stuff, right? I don't know if that's possible or not. But I can tell you, all this stuff sounds great. All this stuff sounds great.
Disgusting capitalist. Immediately turning it into money.
Just let me
finish. We're here for our souls, Dan. Our souls!
I would say all of this stuff sounds great to me who cannot draw a single thing. Like, I would love this function. If I had to communicate a pitch for a movie or for something that I wanted to put together,
and
I have
no
art skills.
Now,
exactly. I can do it myself, which does take away work from you. But that's just kind of the way technology goes, right? Technology does take away jobs. It ultimately does.
And it will take away jobs, and it does take away jobs. But what does a studio ever need your idea for now, Dan? They don't need you ever to write a movie for them.
I guess not. I'll just write it myself and do it myself.
Because what they can do is they can take the entire collected imagery of Blade Runner and mix it with some other movie property they have, Alien, and then say, generate me a feature-length film animated in this style. Go.
I would love to see that.
I
would
love that.
I see what you're saying. No, I see what you're saying, and I do not doubt that we will get that.
We're not as far off from that as we think.
But the quality of it will be very low, I predict.
At first.
At first.
That's like the quality of early animation.
Use it as a blueprint,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Think of in our lifetimes how video games have progressed from that pixel count, you know, 16-bit to now like photorealistic.
I don't know how many bits.
Aloy flicks her hair and the water like is dazzling in the sunlight and it's being rendered in real goddamn time.
Yeah, which is all borrowed from the Assassin's Creed animations.
That's right. They're all
like
boring.
They didn't come up with new ones. They just took stuff from their other existing game and implemented
stack.
While we're on the subject, I do want to kind of give a shout out to one of my favorite TED Talks, which is called "Everything's a Remix."
Yes,
and I feel like you guys know that one. Okay, yeah. I love it. I used to show it to graphic design students because I just like the idea of like, yeah, you're taking somebody else's idea and repurposing it, but you are adding in that talk anyway. He talks about like Bob Dylan and some other people who like add their parts of themselves to the remix, right? Mm-hmm. You have to a remix is actually adding something new to it, and I think as long as they're adding something new or some part of themselves that is significant. Then AI art can be significant. But it just, again, it all depends on the context. It all depends on how you're using it, how you're selling it. I don't know. It's a
along
weird
those same
thing.
Lines that there's that great book, Steal Like an Artist.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, like it's the idea of creating in a vacuum is silly.
It's foolish. Yeah, it's foolish. But it's also, so one of the things that I have been wrestling with is people want me, people from my family, people from my artistic community, whatever, they want me to weigh in on AI art. They want me to put up this new AI art thing. Anything where someone is saying to you, pick a side right now. The argument has just begun. Immediately, you must pick a side.
Yeah.
I am reluctant. It immediately, my red flags go up, right? If you don't have nuance, you don't have an argument at all. You just have dogma. And so this dogmatic rejection of AI art that's going on really labels everyone I see doing it as simple thinkers. And I don't believe artists to be simple thinkers.
No.
I believe that they're reacting out of fear, and they think somehow that them posting on social media, which they don't own anyway, and algorithms running that too, is going to somehow protect them from the future.
Right.
It is not.
I'm not sure. I get, you know, speaking out and raising awareness. Certainly it does raise awareness about the issue.
Yeah.
That's one thing it does do. Because I don't think a lot of people are going around thinking about AI generated art. I know artists are, but most people are like not really. And honestly, to most people, it's just a fun little game they're doing on TikTok. It's nothing more than that.
Yeah.
I think it's up to people who are interested in purchasing art and who do purchase art to learn about who the artist is and who created it and how they created it. I think that's a lot of people don't care about that kind of stuff, but they should.
Yeah, it's like people don't care where their food comes from.
Right.
Why would they care where their art comes
from? Right. So, I mean,
and their food actually sustains them.
And if people do that, then they will probably not choose an AI-generated piece of art over something that's been done by a human.
Yeah.
I think we'll always pick the human work given the choice.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
People pick the cheapest.
Oh, well, right? I guess that's fair. Yeah, and AI is always
cheaper.
And if
I run a company that all we're doing is producing concept art that's AI generated versus the studio downstairs that has artists making it, I'm going to be 100 times cheaper than that studio, so I'm going to get more work.
Yeah. And even if the majority of people reject you, your margin is still going to be better. Enough that you can handle.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's true. Huh. Right. So we're almost creating a new category of art here.
Like McDonald's is the worst. Their food is shitty. Their ingredients are bad. Their way they treat their employees is terrible. Their union busting is legendary. Does it stop the majority of consumers from going there? No.
No. I tell you this. I go to the one downtown here at City Place, and there's a bunch of food. There's like a nice little pho place, whatever. I don't know how to say that. A noodle place. There's a poutine place. There's a couple other places. Every time I go in there, the lineup to McDonald's is all the way across, and everywhere else is dead. And I always walk up to like the nice place and get some good food.
And it's price point.
It's because it's cheaper, rather. Yeah, McDonald's
is
cheapest.
It's quick. It's cheap.
Well, fast is not always... not these days, yeah. but cheap is the key word. So yes, you have a point about that.
And we're
so there are always going to be people who want it cheap and fast. And what's the third thing? Good.
Yeah, good, fast, cheap. It's supposed to that be that you can have those three. Yeah. But now with AI, you can have all three instantly.
Well, good. I don't know. I don't know about good. I guess that depends.
I'll say I follow two. I won't name them here, but I follow two AI art accounts. One of them does remix. It does exactly what I'm saying. It takes all kinds of images from one movie that you like and another, and then mixes a.
Oh my god! I got so angry at that account.
Right?
Why?
Because what they're doing is the post I saw did not let me know it was AI art. They were like, "Did you guys know in the 80s there was this scrapped Jim Henson and RoboCop collaboration? It was Geiger and Jim Henson.
H.R. Geiger.
Oh, I did know that, actually.
And it was just all these screenshots from one of the most amazing looking movies I've never heard of.
That never got made. And it was all.
I scoured the internet for it, and it just turns out that these are just AI generated screenshots. It's not a movie that exists.
Okay,
but
get,
they're indistinguishable from stills of the same.
But
era.
I agree with your anger. So they're misrepresenting themselves of what that is. But I like being able to see that because I was never able to see that. I did know about that. I was aware that that was a thing, but I've never been able to visualize what that would look like. And now that would I'm going to go check that out. Actually,
was it RoboCop Blade Runner?
There's a Robo. There's like RoboCop Blade Runner Japanese anime kind of mixed one.
Yeah. But they need to be upfront. They need to be upfront about what it is and not misrepresent and not do clickbait, which is so totally. Totally what everybody does now.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry,
so okay, so the other account, so one does that, and the other account is a little more narrative focused. This one, I think you could Google it, the way that it's describing a television show that never existed, and that's in the description of each post. You know, this TV show that never existed, but it's the set photos of this long-running show, brackets, that never existed, called The Golden Child, and it's just this crazy, it's like Jodorowsky's Dune.
There was a movie
plus,
called The Golden
there
Child.
There was a Golden Child, yeah.
With so Eddie this, Murphy?
And, yeah.
But and so because people think they've heard of it, they're more inclined to believe it's real. But the post itself just shows you all of these set photography and stills from the movie you or show you wished you could have seen.
Is it related to the movie? Is it the same story? Nothing
not
like that.
Even
because I was going to say there's also an episode of Buck Rogers in which there's a golden child, literally a golden child,
right?
That I've recently seen. But okay, sorry. Go on. I've interrupted you.
So I follow these two accounts, and because I know what they are and I know what they're trying to do, I can't help but see beauty in the creation of the posts. Well, and beauty in the output. And
let me throw this out there because both you and I lament, we talk about this every once in a while, is we have more ideas than we could ever possibly do in our lifetime. The fact that maybe, you know, later today we could take that idea that none of us have put any hours into, we've just been brainstorming, if we put that idea into this AI art generator and could actually get artwork produced of this story that we just came up with, like, that's kind of exciting.
That is kind of exciting, but look at it this way. All the land is colonized already. There's no more land, right? And I'm stealing from Bo Burnham here now in a talk that he gave. Mm-hmm.
The comedian?
The only thing, the only thing they have left to colonize is your time. And every second of your time is being sought after through devices right now. And their big barrier to getting all your attention is the labor cost of producing content. As soon as we remove that labor cost, their ability to literally keep you interested. Imagine the social media profile that has been gathered in your short life, Justin. Now weaponize that to create content only you would find interesting and then shoot it at you through all of these various channels and streaming services, and you will be captivated against your very will.
Yeah, I still say that the less a human is involved in anything, the less good it is.
But the McDonald's element comes back. It doesn't stop people from consuming
it. I know it doesn't stop,
but
I'm
just
saying that.
There's no humans involved in that food anymore.
But I would argue that McDonald's brand has suffered over the years because of its... But McDonald's could be in a much better space than they are now because of their shitty operations. And I would also submit that McDonald's thinks it's something that it's not, maybe. Right. In their advertising and marketing, they seem to portray a place that does not exist.
They know exactly what they are. They just have a really good marketing department.
Well, exactly. There's two different things there. Anyway... I can't remember where I was going with that. I was just saying that when a person does the art, I just feel like it's going to be better. And my knowledge of that is what makes it better.
But I don't think it will be. I drove in a Tesla, or I rode in a Tesla that was better at driving in bad conditions through construction than the driver was. And he said to me, you know, people don't let me turn on the automatic function. And I said, go for it. I'm the author of Automatic Age, and I want to see this robot.
Yeah, okay, that's cool.
Right? And it was better at driving than he could have been, and it saw people coming that I wouldn't have noticed, and it judged conditions way better. If it can drive better than us, it can make art better than us, and that's what people are afraid of.
Oh, I'm all in favor of the self-driving cars. They're overdue.
So, again, if the car can drive you and the computer can make you art for your consumption, the only difference that we're talking about now is people who are consuming art for the sake of supporting an artist.
Yeah.
And most people, the vast majority of people, do not care about others.
Well, yeah.
Right? And so if they can have it for $6.99 or $25.99 and they feel equally that this one and that one are as good as each other, which one are they going to purchase?
Sure.
$6.99. And the other one creates a living wage for a human, and the other one doesn't require a living wage for a human. And I think that is that's where, as much as I want to say, like, hey, everyone just use AI, who cares, right? Express yourself, use your imagination. That's where I feel like the danger is that we're building ourselves up to a cliff that we will not survive the fall off of.
But in terms of the direct threat to you and your livelihood,
I was just going to ask that.
As far as an artist goes, go ahead.
Where do you foresee you being directly affected by this? Us directly affected.
You already by being said, hard to do covers is one.
Yes, take it to the cons for a second. You've already said that two examples that these places have been drummed out of cons. People do not like this to be at conventions, so it's not likely to be accepted there anytime soon.
That won't stick.
So it's not going to compete with you at conventions.
No, it will. It will. It absolutely will. Think of it like this way: fan art is a blatant violation of trademark and copyright, and the shows turn a blind eye to all of it. Right, all of it. And
because it drives Artist Alley.
Exactly. So if it still drives Artist Alley, if AI artists who can produce art faster, better, quicker, more new stuff, more often, start signing up for shows more than other artists do, they will slowly, inexorably fill up Artist Alley. And the consumer who does not care, they simply want what they want when they want it, right? There are some shows that had the rule of no fan art allowed. And they become very different animals as a result.
Yeah.
They become very different. TCAF,
are artists going to have little stands on their table that say no AI art at this table?
Right. But you'll have to believe them. So why would an AI artist just put that on there?
Yeah, and I don't think that generally that attitude about fan art is shared by the world.
Exactly my point.
Most people don't care about that kind of stuff either. Okay, well, I get what you're saying, but I just think that...
I'm saying it's naive to believe that the good will win out.
Yeah,
in the end.
I agree. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that as far as your actual business practice of selling at conventions, it's not like somebody's going to turn you down and go buy AI art down the hall.
Sure they will. Why wouldn't they? Because the price will be lower.
I know, but you're saying they're being jumped out of cons. They're not
only now.
Okay, it will, become more accepted as we go.
Right.
But there is some, you know, still some interesting possibilities here. I like the idea of because you are...
Actually, hold on, wait, before we jump over that, okay. I want to come back to your point. There was a time when digital artists, people who painted digitally, showed up at shows and they were being laughed out of or told not to come or being kind of rejected from the Comic-Con circuit.
Right.
Everything's digital now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
so what will be the difference? There'll be no difference.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just going to be one more tool. And if you are a showrunner and you have 200 spaces booked, if 100 of them are AI artists, or 100 places booked if it's just human artists, what are you, the showrunner, going to do?
Well, you're just going to take whoever wants to book your tables, right? Exactly. So that's right? All that matters.
Right. The consumers will set the level, not the artists and not the showrunners.
Okay, well, where I was going to go with this is that the real competition is online. So forget that. So I was just going to say, it's not as much in person, but online, because you guys have websites that you sell your prints at. That is the real competition, because they look at your piece next to, online takes away all context, right? So it's all about, you're going to see just your piece of art next to an AI-generated piece of art, which may look better to that person, therefore they're going to buy that.
Yeah.
Right? That's where the real threat is to artists, I think, is just in people shopping for art online, shopping for posters, shopping for things that they want to buy, which is a different experience than at a con, I would say.
Yeah.
Dave, stop.
stop, will you? Stop there.
I can take, Gregory's entire portfolio, mm-hmm. pump out a whole bunch of AI-generated art, and open up a Redbubble or Society6 and just fill it.
In one day, generate 100 or 200 images that are close enough to mine to fill out an entire online third-party store.
And most people won't know the difference, right? It's just, looks pretty. I like this.
So in a month, you could have 30 stores
all
producing revenue for you.
Is that happening? Is that...
Yeah. Well, that's... what has been happening, right? Like
people pretending to be other artists and selling? Okay.
Yeah, people steal art, open up a store.
Well, I know that happens when they take an image, they just steal an image offline, but are they actually creating new AI images and saying it's
probably
this artist?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. There was, I can't remember her name, but there was an artist who just yesterday posted this long post about somebody basically making a website with her name and then some other piece to it, like fine art or whatever, instead of just a .com. And it was all AI versions of her artwork because she does very well selling prints. Mm-hmm. And so this was similar art for half the price. And that's how it was being advertised as with her name on it. It was like, do you like such and such? And then a link to work that was just like hers.
So is it just buyer beware then? People just have to be aware of where they're getting their art from? I know you just said that most people don't care.
Yeah.
But should they care?
Yeah, and can she shut that person down?
No.
Well, legally, maybe. I mean, depends. And online makes it all fuzzy legally, right? Because they're probably in different countries and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's...
So, I don't know.
Always everybody's first response. Well, just go sue them. It's like, they're not in my country.
Yeah.
People don't understand.
They're not using their full name.
So, let's get back to the sweet spot, something we actually know something about. How do you define what art is?
I think there has to be a human involved. Although, I don't know. I mean, at some point, we're going to have real AIs, real artificial intelligences, and they may be defined as people. It's going to be like the Matrix where they become actual, conscious.
Yeah, if it has feelings you can hurt, will it qualify?
Right. Oh, that's a whole other thing. But that's that will be real AI, and I would be actually open to that as long as they're not evil and don't want
to
take over.
Set those standards now. But if you decide, so when I define artwork, something is artistic. Someone can throw paint at a canvas, and I can throw paint at a canvas. And if someone's just throwing paint at a canvas because they think this will sell, I don't believe that to be artwork. Art requires intention. There has to be a reason why you set up the practice, and the output represents the idea that you went going, that you have going in. It's an iteration of an idea expressed through some different medium, right? Justin can't draw by hand with pencil crayons or paints or whatever, the kinds of things that only those vector pieces can fit together to make, right? So it's just the guitar, right? He's playing Adobe Illustrator in a way no one intended to, and he's making beautiful music as a result, right? And he always goes in with an idea, right? It's something very simple we've talked about before is the big versus small, right? I'm going to come in, I'm going to set up a single narrative in one image where people can understand that there's this opposing force and a tiny thing resisting it, and people really like and respond to that. And also, it represents the life of an artist being an outcast. It represents the life of most people who are sort of into our fandoms. They're often outcasts, right? So it speaks to that world. Someone else who just, I'm coming around the long way, someone did notice that Justin's art was very popular, someone who will remain nameless, and then hired an artist to basically do Shattered Vector, and then showed up at shows nearby him and started selling work that was obviously inspired.
But you don't own the process of Shattered Vector artwork, so that's allowed, but in poor taste.
So there you go.
No, we can't control that.
Right. But what I'm saying is Justin's is art and theirs is imitation.
Sure.
We were able to have a conversation with said individual and put a stop to it, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, so we took the human step.
What now? Would you, and without getting into too much detail, was it like an intentional thing or were they
really just... It was very much an intentional. Oh, okay.
Saw this work was selling well, thought I'd do some too.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe they felt that was okay. I don't think it is, but...
the consumer care either way?
No, the consumer does not care.
Yeah, what really tipped it off was three different people came up to me and said, he's doing what you're trying, he's trying to take your style. Mm. Yeah. So it wasn't, it was noticeable.
But then the viewer completes the art. locked in.
Yeah.
And so if the viewer sees it as art, then it becomes art again. If their heart gets a flutter because they've seen it, no matter the horrible consumerist intent behind capitalizing on a trend, if someone else feels good looking at it and hangs it in their house and feels good looking at it every day, then it becomes art again.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. This is reminding me of, I had a friend who gave me, and she'll never listen to this podcast, so I think I could talk about this. She gave me a poster. Like, I mentioned at some point that I liked this artwork for Evil Dead 2 that was on the, I believe it's just a VHS release of it. But it's the eyeball?
No,
because that image is never in the movie. That's the thing about Evil Dead 2 is that the famous cover is just a skull with eyes, and that is never part of the movie. But the actual, this is art. It's actually, you can tell it's drawn or painted or whatever, and it's like shows the woman, and it shows Ash, and it shows all these different images, and the monster. It's really well done, and it's Evil Dead 2 and in this cool font, and I really love that art image. And I said, oh, I'd love to have that as a poster, right? And not even, I just said it as an aside, nothing thinking of it. And I didn't know, like, I knew it was a cover for this. I had the VHS that it was a cover for, but I never knew if it was released as a poster or anything. So this friend of mine, as a gift, found an image online and just had it printed. She just found an image of this thing and printed it. And it looked horrible. Okay, first of all, it was low res. It was not, does not look good. It bleeds. You know, this friend didn't know anything about any of that stuff.
Right.
So I accepted it. I didn't say, thank you very much. I love this movie. And it was very nice. And I was very gracious about the gift. But I would never have purchased that on my own. Right? That is not a good enough quality poster for me to purchase.
But so if she had known a little bit about the AI Discord that I was on, you can take low-res images and put it in and just ask it to up-res it.
But that's not the same piece of art that was on the cover of that VHS tape. That's what makes that special to me, is that specific context of it being a part of the release of the film. What makes it special, right?
So that
to me, an AI would not be able to recreate that. So anyway, I don't know what the point of all that was. It just reminded me of the whole conversation about artwork.
But let me unpack that. The context of your relationship to the work is what makes it art.
Yeah.
And because her intent was to give you a gift that you would enjoy, but your relationship with the work was different than just consumptive, it changes your relationship with the gift.
Yeah.
Right? But you're a thoughtful person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Thoughtful person. Thank you for the gift. But I would much rather have a properly, like, you know, purchased print from the artist on that, although that might not exist anymore.
And that's the problem with buying art off the internet. It looks really nice on the web page, but a lot of, when artists or when people steal art on the internet and post it, they don't have the high res piece, right? That's always when my work gets stolen off the internet, it's always the part that makes me sad is they're selling a low res version.
Yeah, so someone's bought it and art. It's not as good.
So they're printing it out as a poster, and it's gonna look like it's gonna be pixelated, it's gonna be blurry, it's gonna look like crap because they just stole a low res version and are selling it.
Where should
it as
someone find the high res versions of your things in order to make this not a problem? There was a time in our artistic it was happening more often when those third-party sites came up where you could just print on whatever and sell stuff, where both Justin and I were getting, like, fans of ours or people who were looking out saying, like, oh, someone's printing pillowcases with your art on it, someone's printing whatever. And at a certain point, I just didn't police it anymore. Like, the amount of effort to get them to stop far outstripped my ability to make new work.
Yeah, I mean, it's not worth it in the end, right? Yeah. And I mean, I guess it does hurt you because it takes away, it waters down the value of your work. But in the end, you can't really do much about it.
Yeah,
I would like to see art off between you and you guys and an AI.
They'd win every time.
We should do that though. We should do it, like, give you guys the same set of prompts.
There's an old folk song about this: a guy who tries to beat the steam engine.
Oh yes, of course.
And then he dies at the end. He wins but dies. I don't want to be the AI art version of that battle. Okay. No.
Daisy, give me your answer to. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you.
I don't know. This is apocryphal now. I haven't checked my sources, but I saw a video that seemed to suggest that Cosmopolitan's new issue was made by A-Art. It's like a woman astronaut on the moon, and it was all generated by AI. So Cosmopolitan is using it to generate covers. Other book companies are using it to generate covers. I know some freelancers who are using it as a good way to generate book covers and then not have to pay an artist to be the middleman. Do you think, the three of us are book buyers, do you think it's possible that you've already purchased the AI art and just don't know?
No. I haven't purchased it recently.
I don't think it's probably showing up yet, given how the like supply the timeline chain is busted.
And I buy used books mostly. I don't buy a lot of new books, but so by the time it filters down to me, it's going to be a while. But I, you know, and I guess it, for the cover of a book, yes, I understand that. It's not the most important part of it, but it does take away.
Yeah, for the artist. That hurts so much to hear you say that. But see, the consumer does not care.
Well, I don't know. I don't about the cover, you know. It's very nice, but I guess
I don't even know how to respond.
It takes away one job from you. It takes away one possible job from you, but you have so many other possible jobs that you can do.
But they're better at that too.
Well, sorry,
right? Yeah. That becomes a thing, and so you're like, okay, well, you're a writer. Well, the AI is writing also pretty good copy.
Though, here's the thing, though. Think about music, right? Electronic music has been around for a while. I'm sure that. You can program, I'm sure this has existed for a long time, a computer that can write music.
Yeah.
Has that taken over the music industry?
Actually, this is a great point you make, because the data is there from what happened. So I'll unpack this. If you think of a graph of success in music, it used to look kind of like a tower, real narrow, with a high place. And so you'd have this barrier of entry that went on for a long time. And if you broke through that barrier, then you'd lift up to this rarefied air in music. I'm talking about the like 60s, 70s, 80s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, with the proliferation of all these off-the-shelf music things, it's more like a huge, wide ziggurat or pyramid where you can get in right away. But to get up to the top, right, it's actually lower. The highest you can reach is lower than it used to be. And the ability for people to make a living at it once they break through, almost non-existent.
It's fleeting, right? Yeah. It's you can get to the top, but you're not going to last very
long.
You
won't stay there long, right?
Yeah.
So I guess maybe ours is just the last industry to be colonized in that way.
I just feel like people, never mind, you keep shooting this down. People don't care. I do feel like people care. And I think that people will eventually. Right now it's a fad. People are thinking it's cool. It's interesting. I don't think it's going to stick around. I think it's going to fall away because people will realize that a real person creating art is better than an algorithm.
See, I love the work of Mike Mignola.
Oh, I know this.
Right?
Yeah, you've said this many times.
Love his work. But if I didn't know that it was a person and I just saw it and loved it, would I care after a while? That it wasn't a person.
Because you love it, though, you take the time to learn about the person who created it.
After the fact, though.
Yes,
like,
after the fact.
You know, when you're young, you just pick up.
I don't think
there's
any algorithm that's going to be able to do that. No algorithm can recreate Mike Mignola. I don't think that's possible.
Bet they can.
I don't know.
Sorry, Mike. They're coming for you.
Come on. That's pretty unique art style that I don't think should work in popular comics, but did.
Right.
Anyway, that's just one example. I mean, sure, there's lots of other examples. You have a more generic style of artwork like the Marvel style in DC that we've talked about, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It would work great for that, but not for like specific titles where the artist is an integral part of it. And I would say that both of you are like
name that. A title in comics where the artist has become an integral part of it that's not creator-owned. If it's Marvel or DC, the artist does not remain integral ever. They are constantly replaced.
But for certain periods of time, you could say the artist is integral to it. Like you could say the Todd McFarlane run of Spider-Man was really good.
Right.
And so that could, you know.
And because Todd was not paid appropriately
left. Yes.
He left. So right. Do you think those companies are hoping, right, that people will reject AI art? Or are they rubbing their hands?
I think the comic companies are rubbing their hands.
Right.
I think there's definitely a possibility as far as comic books go, because you're just talking about the same character in different.
Well, look at Archie, right? Archie
positions.
Is like a Ooh, formula.
Great
right?
example.
Yeah.
There's no artistic flair to Archie. There's like, yeah, It's like cookie cutter. Yeah.
And,
right?
And you really don't know who the artist is in Archie, right?
Well, I can name one. Dan Parent is a regular Archie contributor and can draw anything in that Archie style. And it is a style that you learn and he helped to create. But when they bring in a new artist, they have to also match that style.
So could they have an AI do Archie?
Yes.
I wonder.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Because it is so generic. It is so like strict.
I mean, you could feed the 10,000 pages of Archie you got into the AI. And
think of Mickey Mouse or like The Simpsons. Like there is a formula to Homer's head, to Mickey Mouse's head, and you do not stray from the formula.
Animation is a great example. Yeah. It's thousands of hands working over, like using Simpsons over decades.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Making the same character.
And
over
even
and
then,
over
the
and
style
over.
Does evolve over. Like The Simpsons now does not look like The Simpsons like when it started, right? So there's that as well.
But the reason behind that was efficiency, not artistic integrity.
Right, so they can make it more generic and easier to do.
Yeah.
Huh, what was... Oh, okay.
Interesting. So the world is a hollowed-out wasteland.
That's right, there's no hope. Stop creating art and go get a job. Go get a real job.
Yeah. That's the message. No, because the robots do that better already, too.
Okay, so now there's no hope.
Yeah, so what we need is, I guess, a universal basic income because the robots are coming for everything. This all started in the rubble of our back room clear-out. And I think that's where we should bring it back around, right? One of the things that I found in that back room, which Justin took with reverence, to others it would have been a scrap of garbage, right? Justin has this habit, dear listener, and I'm going to give you a peek into his brain and his artistic process, of on the backs of scraps of cardboard, he will iterate certain pieces, certain stories, certain characters, and then use them as the back of his display over the course of a year or two. And
hold
keep
the prints
adding
up.
To her, right? They just hold the prints up. It's like a piece of cardboard. And as I was sweeping up some of this, some of the debris, I picked up one, and Justin knew exactly what piece it was from, when it was from, why it was from, and moved it over out of the garbage pile to set it, right? And maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on this, but it seemed like you had another idea occur to you while you were looking at it.
Remind me, which one was it?
This was that Spider-Man one. You were like, ooh, this is my Spider-Man.
Well, when did you make that piece first?
Oh, God, 2015.
Right.
Like it's like 7 years ago.
And okay. So like we can return in our own lives to moments of our own artistic process and say, oh, now I'm good enough to do a different thing with that idea, which I recorded, right? I'm doing I'm remixing and recreating a new graphic novel for Midnight City using some of the old stuff and a whole bunch of the new stuff. I'm better at writing now. I'm better at making art now. And so I'm not ready to give up on that idea. And so I've come back to it. So we still, as the generators of, I don't like the word soul, but the putting the soul into it, right? Like you have something to bring that's unique to your experience, and maybe that's the one thing they won't be able to take away from us.
Yeah.
Or you, dear listener.
AI doesn't have a soul.
It's true.
Yet.
Yes.
Wait.
But
they'll do an algorithm for that too.
I mean, the secular listeners will also agree with me when I say we don't have souls either. So, right. It's
fair
fine.
Enough, fair
so
enough.
This has been the dystopian episode of Super Pulp Science. I'm encouraging you all to join the fight and make comics. How you do that, I guess, these days is up to you.